In an appearance at the Cleveland Clinic last week, President Bush touted his Health Information Technology Plan. This is a 10-year plan to move the American healthcare system away from paper records and prescription pads and into the digital age. He followed up that appearance with a mention in his State of the Union address this week when he called for improved information technology to prevent medical error and needless costs. With an estimated 100,000 deaths each year due to medical and hospital errors, who would be against modernizing health records? Making it easy to read a printed prescription instead of that chicken scratch of a doctor's handwriting? Keeping accurate, up-to-date medical records so that when you check into the emergency room, they already know what you're allergic to or whether you have diabetes? The problem is, of course, twofold. One, who is going to pay? President Bush's plan calls for an outlay of $125 million. Not much money on a national level about the cost of one B-1 bomber. The other concern, patient privacy. If you're talking about one common system that all hospitals and doctors across the country can access, who will have access to your health records? Should insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies be able to use the patient database for research if, for instance, it might improve patient safety? What do you think? Some of those things we'll be talking about this hour. And if you'd like to get in on that conversation, give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Lucian Leap is an adjunct professor of health policy at the Harvard School of Public Health. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Leap.
Nice to be here, Ara.
You're welcome. William Hirsch is a professor and chairman of the Department of Medical Informatics and Clinical Epidemiology at the Oregon Health and Science University in Portland. He joins us from Portland. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Hirsch.
Thank you, Ira. A pleasure to be here.
Joseph Heyman is an obstetrician and gynecologist in private practice. He serves on the Board of Trustees of the American Medical Association and on the Board of Commissioners of the Joint Commission of Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations. And you know what that is if you're in the trade. It's called JCO. He joins us by phone from Amesbury, Massachusetts. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Heyman.
Thrilled to be here, Ira. Thank you.
Let's talk. Dr. Hirsch, explain to us how a computerized record system would be different from what we have now.
Well, it actually wouldn't be different. And actually, to clarify, no one is really advocating a complete monolithic single system. But what we have now is most transactions in healthcare take place in paper, whether it's fax or slips of paper. And this leads, as you and probably others know, to medical errors, duplication, and so forth. And so what we're basically advocating is replacing the traditional paper chart and all its problems with an electronic one. And it will not solve all the problems in medicine, but it will go a long ways towards solving some.
And would it be leading to a central database of all patients?
Absolutely not. No one is advocating that, and that needs to be made really clear up front. There will be sharing of data in a secure and private manner, but there will definitely not be a single database.
So if I had a physician and he was on the system, somewhere those records are going to reside, right?
That's correct.
Where would they reside?
They'll typically reside in a hospital or in a physician's office, or there may be a trusted third-party server somewhere, but they won't be in a single database.
So if I go out of town and I get in a car accident and I need medical care, that out-of-town person won't know anything about my records in that database?
Well, that's the next step. The first step is electronic health records, and we still have a long ways to go there. The next step is what is commonly called health information exchange and interoperability. And the idea there is to create a system so that the appropriate data could be accessed securely at the appropriate time across traditional business boundaries. And there's only a few cities around the United States that have this right now, and this is a fairly long way off.
But it's something you'd be aiming for.
Oh, definitely, yes. And there's an initiative at the national level called the National Health Information Infrastructure that's trying to develop not only the technology, but also the laws, the regulations, the financing and so forth to carry out a system like that.
Mm-hmm. William Hirsch, the president has asked for $125 million in the 2006 budget. Seems like a drop in a hat, but didn't he appoint a health information technology czar, David Brailer, who asked Congress for $50 million for a pilot project and never got the money?
Yes, well, yes, and you're correct. The $125 million really is a drop in the bucket to what it would cost to do this nationally. But that money would go a long way towards establishing demonstration projects, developing standards, mm-hmm. and so forth. The reason why the money was left out of the budget apparently has to do with politics, oversight, and so forth. But one of the interesting things about this issue is that it's very bipartisan. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton and Bill Frist wrote a column together in the New York Times last summer. There's pretty much agreement, at least in principle. There probably are some disagreements in terms of the political parties on who would pay for it. But the view, I think, is that most of the payment will come from the system and the users of the system, ultimately the patients.
Dr. Leap, the president says that a system of electronic health records would reduce errors. We've all heard of errors in hospitals. Let's go down some of the most common errors that we see in hospitals. I know for one thing, we talked about just reading the doctor's handwriting.
Right. The area that has gotten the most attention is medication errors. Handwriting is the one everybody thinks about. It turns out not to be nearly as common as some of the other things. But we did a big study of medical errors about 10 years ago. Medication errors accounted for about one out of every five. And that's a place where computers really can make a difference. Computerized prescribing, having a physician enter the prescription in a computer rather than writing it by hand, not only gets rid of the handwriting business, it makes sure that the medication order is complete, has the right dose and frequency, but it also makes it possible for the doctor to be reminded that the patient's allergic to a drug or that the drug interacts with another one. And the first study we did on this some years ago showed that using the computer would reduce those prescribing errors by 80%. So there's not much question that the computer can have a big impact in the medication safety range.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Heyman, you're a gynecologist in private practice, and you already have a sort of a paperless office where you've digitized everything. Can you tell us how practical and how your system works?
Well, first of all, it's very practical. It's very efficient. I actually have only one employee and me, and I do the billing. And she greets the patients. We both give out appointments. We both answer the phone. And I have actually more time to be with my patients, and I actually have more face-to-face time because when I'm entering the data, I do it in my examining room, so they're sitting across the table from me. Not in the examining room, in my consultation room. And the way it works is they come in, and the demographics are taken by my reception lady, and then if they're a brand new patient, I bring them into my office and I take a history, and while I'm taking the history, I'm actually entering it into the computer at the same time. It's point and click with templates, and I'm very familiar with the program now, so it's very quick for me.
What's the program called?
The program is called EMDs, E-MDS, and you can actually take a look at it on their website. And then I take them into the examining room, and I do their examination. And if there's anything important about them that I'm, concerned that I might forget or that I shouldn't forget, I'll write it down on a piece of paper. Then I bring her back into my examining room, and I enter their physical exam while they're getting dressed. And then when they arrive, I'm almost done with it. And I enter their prescriptions right into the computer. And just like Dr. Leap said, if I make a mistake, and it happens, that I might try to order something they're allergic to or something that conflicts with something else that they're taking, it automatically stops me and makes sure I really want to do what I'm saying I want to do.
Can you write your prescription right out there on the computer and send it to the pharmacy?
Well, I do e-prescribing, but I don't do it directly from my medical record program. That's one of the problems that Dr. Hirsch was commenting on. Things don't talk to each other very well yet. So I have a different software program for my e-prescribing from the program that I use for my medical records. So usually if the patient's in the office, I give them a printed prescription, which just prints out after I do their exam. And if they call me on the phone or if it's somebody looking for a refill, I do that electronically over the Internet.
Hmm. Are you able to communicate with the hospital where you work?
Again, I can indeed. But the problem is that the hospital's program doesn't talk to my medical records program yet. And so there again, I have to either use a different computer terminal where I can print out information from the hospital, or I use the computer terminal at my desk, and then I can only access the information, but I can't print it out and I can't cut and paste it into the patient's record.
So you're a little ahead of the curve on this with the hospitals and other people who are moving in that direction.
Well, I think for a small practice, I certainly am ahead of the curve. I think that, you know, in large networks of physicians, where the physicians are actually either employed by the hospital or have some sort of formal association with their hospital, they probably use the same record their hospital does, and so they don't have that problem. But the thing is, most people in this country don't get their care from those kinds of networks. They get them from people like me.
Dr. Hirsch, if hospitals are moving toward their own systems of records, are we now in the crucial period now so we can network Dr. Heyman and all these other people together, make sure they all talk to each other?
Yes, and that's one of the biggest problems. We don't have standards for systems to communicate with each other well, but that's actually what part of this $125 million will go towards. Many of the vendors are stepping up. Actually, Dr. Brailer, I think one of the best things that he has done has used a little bit of a bully pulpit to get the vendors to realize how important this is.
All right, hold that thought, okay? I have to break away. We'll take a short break, come back, and talk more about the electronic hospital of the future. Stay with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about modernizing healthcare records with my guests, Lucian Leap, Adjunct Professor of Health Policy at Harvard School of Public Health, William Hirsch of the Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, Joseph Heyman, an obstetrician and gynecologist in private practice. Our number 1-800-989-8255. And when I rudely interrupted Dr. Hirsch, he was talking about getting the bully pulpit, I think you were talking about.
Right. Well, I was just pointing that's been a real positive thing of Dr. Brailer. This issue of interoperability is key, and there's plenty of other examples in other industries. The classic example is that you can take your ATM card and, for example, as I did a couple years ago when I was with my daughter in China, stick it in a ATM in China, my local bank card, and get Chinese yuan out. The airline reservation industry shares data and so forth. So we need to develop systems to do this in healthcare. It's not going to be that easy. And in fact, the technical problems are less daunting than some of the legal and economic ones. But again, if there is a will to do it, hopefully we'll make progress.
Dr. Leap, why has the healthcare industry been so slow to move on electronic records? You think they jump into this?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons. You've just heard some of them, and that is that that one person's system doesn't talk to another. But I think a fundamental reason is the physicians are the ones that end up having to pay for this, and the cost is not inconsiderable, and they don't get that back. So there's an upfront cost, and in addition to that, it requires a fair amount of effort to put it in. Dr. Heyman is unfortunately quite the exception. Most doctors haven't been willing to go through the fuss that it takes to build your own system when you don't have something that will connect to others. We've just done a study in Massachusetts, for example, and found that it would cost about $30,000 to $35,000 for each physician per year to put in a computer system. And the irony of it is that the economic benefit goes to the insurance companies. They have fewer costs because, of course, there will be fewer errors and complications, fewer inappropriate tests, fewer inappropriate use of medications, and fewer errors in billing. And when we ran the numbers, it looks as if to computerize all the doctors in Massachusetts would cost about $700 or $800 million, but over a 5-year period. but the insurance companies would reap a benefit of $5
billion. Hmm.
Based on that, we've got them interested in paying for doing this, and we're just about to launch an experiment in a community where we're going to have try to get a complete integrated computer system between the hospital and the doctor's offices, ones that deal with this interoperability issue. And if we can get that to work the way we think it will, our payers say they're willing to pay for putting them in all the doctor's offices.
Wow.
I think that's the way we're going to get it done.
Yeah, because there's so much money spent in just record keeping in these insurance companies.
Well, and doctors have to spend a lot of money to put their patients' records on the computer, too, for example.
Yeah. Let's go to Bill in Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Ira. First, I have to say I enjoyed your conversation last night with Dr. Friedman. And
thank you.
Of the city. But getting back to the topic, Dr. Hirsch, I'd like to ask you about the use of open standards in an attempt to minimize the cost of a national EHR. I was reading an article in the journal Health Affairs, and they estimated that there could be a savings of $78 billion a year using an open standard. But this is assuming...
You mean not a proprietary system, but an open source system?
Something like what the VA uses, the Vista.
I see.
And I was wondering why the Vista system could not be used, not necessarily in a monolithic way, but maybe a peer-to-peer network. This article said that they estimated it would take $276 billion over the next 10 years to implement this system. Mm.
Dr. Hirsch, any comment?
I think it's important to differentiate between open standards and open source software. I'm enthusiastic about both of those, but open standards don't necessarily preclude open source software or proprietary software. I think it's not clear in an industry like healthcare whether open source software will be successful, though I hope it will be, and I think it could be. But the idea of open standards is really more standards for systems to communicate. One of the problems now is that systems don't call the same thing by the same name. One system might call it a blood sugar. The other one might call it a serum blood glucose. We as humans can easily understand that, but computers don't. The words have to be precise. And so the study that in Health Affairs, which was done in Dr. Leap's backyard as well, showed that if we were to adopt these standards in terms of what we call things, the data elements and so forth, that we would be able to potentially save about $77 billion a year. And I just want to reiterate Dr. Leap's point that the physicians are being sort of asked, even cajoled, to put these systems in their offices, and I would encourage them to do so too. But the business proposition as of right now is not there.
Thanks for calling, Bill.
Sure.
1-800-989-8255. Could a patient, let's talk about privacy, could a patient, if they really wanted to, could they opt out of the system if they don't feel it's secure enough for them?
Well, this is Joe Heyman. One of my concerns is that people automatically assume that it's going to be an opt-out rather than an opt-in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we've actually come to that conclusion yet, whether it would be opt-in or opt-out. I know that people on the system side would prefer an opt-out because it's harder to get people to volunteer to do something than it is to get them to not volunteer. But I'm concerned on the privacy side about whether patients should automatically be in the system. The other thing is I think that one of the things that you need to know is that one of the proposals for being able to index all these patients is this patient locator system, where there would be actually an index that would tell where everybody's information is located, so that if you did go into an emergency room someplace in Washington State, but you were here from Massachusetts, they would be able to find your information. And we don't know whether patients are going to be opting in or opting out of the locator system, or are they going to be opting in or opting out of the actual giving the medication, you know, the medical information.
Well, perhaps you could have one of these little chips you carry on your ring, you know, on a keychain, that we have these little chips now that you plug into the USB port. Could you carry your history on that?
The problem is that those chips can get lost and so forth. It's probably better to put the information on a network.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we really need to do is an educational job in terms of letting people know the benefits of electronic health records and to not necessarily focus on the privacy issues. I think, well, one thing we know for sure with paper records, the privacy issues are still there. In fact, they may be worse. At least with electronic records, we know who's logged in, looked at a chart, and so mm-hmm. forth. So we need to educate people about the privacy issues and the benefits of these systems.
I'd like to chip in on that if I can,
sure,
Ira.
Go ahead.
One of the benefits that we haven't talked about has to do with getting data on a new treatment, particularly a new drug. There's been a lot of discussion recently with Vioxx being taken off the market and so forth about why is it took 5 years for us to find out that it was unsafe. If we have electronic health records, patients, when they go on a new medication, they can agree to have the information about their side effects recorded and sent in automatically to a central database. In a matter of 6 months or so, you would have information on tens of thousands of patients, and some serious side effects would be discovered within a matter of months or a year instead of 5 or 6 years. And I think it would make a tremendous difference in the safety of new drugs. Just one of the examples of things we can get from electronic health record.
We've had the healthcare officials come on the program and talk about the war on terrorism and the possibility of creating an interlocking system of hospitals to know if a terrorist attack, you know, bio attack has occurred by patients filtering into the hospitals and saying a spike someplace. Could you not just piggyback this onto that kind of system? You know, if you want to get the funding, just sneak it in as part of a larger system of looking for, you know, these spikes that might happen?
That's certainly one of the benefits, but I think the major benefits are really with clinical care. There was a study in this week's JAMA that showed, for example, they surveyed a number of physicians. 13% of all encounters, this large group of physicians in Colorado had missing information, half of which was accessible elsewhere but took 5 to 10 minutes to get. The real benefit of this is to clinical care. And I point out these locator systems and so forth. Most developed countries already have healthcare identifiers. It's probably not politically feasible in the United States at this time, but it would really be a benefit in terms of making records more accessible in appropriate ways. There's a wonderful website. The government of New Zealand has a National Health Index, and they describe all the privacy protections and so forth, but they also talk about the benefits of it. Our organization, the American Medical Informatics Association, is starting a Got EHR campaign, kind of modeled on the Got Milk thing, to try to really show the benefit of electronic health records and to assuage some of the concerns about privacy.
What do you do instead of the mustache there? What do you do?
Good question.
Dan in Fort Myers. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, go ahead.
I've worked in IT and NIS for 15 years. We've done a lot of work with biotech companies, hospitals, hospital chains. And, you know, I'm hearing the numbers you guys are talking about, and I'm thinking they're off by a factor of three. You know, I think if you really wanted to try and do something like this on a national basis, you're probably looking at closer to $2 billion or more just to make it work. And that's even if you could overcome the politics of it. And then, you know, based on just, you know, my experience dealing with one large institution is complex enough. When you start dealing with governments and with individual practitioners, healthcare companies, there's a lot of politics that are going to get involved that could just drive this thing right under before it even got started.
And I want to add to that, you know, what's to prevent, how can we be sure that the government won't one day come back and say, you know, we need all this data about women who've had abortions, like Attorney General John Ashcroft wanted to know. Let me ask my guest. How do we know that's not going to happen? Something like that.
Well,
is not
he
happen?
He got the data off of paper medical records. So, you know, I agree that that's a big concern, but you know, we have to remember that you don't necessarily have to have an electronic system to do that. You have to compare the risks and the benefits, and I think we should have that discussion.
1-800-989-8255. Martha in Elmendorf, Texas. Hi, Martha.
Hello.
Hi there.
My concern is that with a computerized system, how can patients access their own records? We've been talking about, you know, the problems of getting all this computerized for doctors and so on, but how could I see my records if I wanted to? It's
yeah.
hard to monitor what's going on. Recently my spouse was in the hospital, and we couldn't access the records when the doctors don't want to talk to you these days. You can't just go and look at the records at the top of the bed and see what's going on.
John Heyman, can your doctors, your patients do that?
Actually,
Joe, I'm sorry.
Yes, if you actually went to, I actually have a patient website for my office, which is www.heyman.yourmd.com. And if a patient went there, they could email me to ask a question or to get information. They could ask for a prescription refill. They could make an appointment. But in addition to that, in the upper right-hand corner, there's something called the interactive health record. And they could enter that data, and eventually I would be able to import that data into their medical record, and also I could export their medical record into that data.
There's a system that does what your caller asked for at the Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital in Boston. All the patients' records are on the web, and patients can access them anytime securely with a password. And they can get their any information. They can actually enter information. They can put notes in of their own observations. When there's a laboratory test done or an X-ray, they can go on the web and find the results. And they've been using that system for over 5 years now, and it works very well. I think it's a model for what we need to do for everybody.
There you go, Martha. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about upgrading healthcare this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday.
There's another NPR news.
Hang on. I got to pay that bill there. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Joe, is that you?
Yes. There's another advantage to this also, and that's in off hours. I can access any patient's record at any time with my system. So even when I'm traveling for the AMA or for JACO, I can actually, if a patient emails me a question or a request, I can actually access their record. I can cut and paste it into an email message back to them, and I can e-prescribe from wherever I am. So there are tremendous advantages to this system, without any question. And it's just a matter of making it affordable and having these systems talk to each other.
So why does, if things are working, sound like they're percolating along here, why does the president have to come out and say, I need $125 million to get this thing going? Certainly it's going to cost a lot more than that, we know. This is just to study it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the issue goes back to what Dr. Leap said. The physicians, physicians are becoming increasingly enthusiastic about electronic health records, but the business side of it, a practice that it may not quite be 35,000, maybe it is in Massachusetts, it varies across the country. But the point is that you can't really ask physicians to invest this massive sum of money, let alone hospitals and so forth, without the benefits going back to the person who makes the investment, at least them recouping the cost of their investment. If you look at other medical technologies like CAT scanners, the financial picture is completely in line. The people who invest in the CAT scanner make the money off of it. The problem with electronic health records, the benefits are unquestionable, but the person who makes the investment, people like Dr. Heyman, don't necessarily get even just the money to pay back the system. They may have to pay more. And as we know, many physicians' offices in this day and age are barely struggling to stay afloat.
Bill, don't you think the other problem is they're concerned they'll get a system that won't talk to other systems? So this whole interoperability stuff's got to be worked out.
All right, and we've got to leave it here because we've run out of time, but we're just getting the ball rolling on this topic, and we'll follow it as it continues to roll. Lucian Leap, adjunct professor of health policy at Harvard School of Public Health. William Hirsch, professor and chairman of the Department of Medical Informatics and Clinical Epidemiology at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland. Joseph Heyman, obstetrician and gynecologist in a private practice. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking time to talk with us. We'll visit back with you. It's an interesting topic. Thanks for coming talking with us. You're welcome.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk with someone who watches brains creating false memories as they're happening. Interesting. Stay with us. We'll be right back.